Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Azure. I'm Tobias, and I'm back again with Yussi. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. Summer is officially here. Right now in Helsinki, it is +1 Celsius outside. And I think it's about 34 Fahrenheit. I always suck with the conversion, so I just go to Google to check it out. But 34 Fahrenheit, yes. So it's cold, gray, a bit wet. You generally just don't want to go out. But hear me out. The solar panels that I installed when I built the house the year before last, they are getting a bit of power now. So that's a clear sign to me that summer effectively is here. So the snow that I normally have on the roof, that has mostly melted because we've had a couple of really warm days now, meaning +2 Celsius, which is about 36 Fahrenheit. And yesterday, the gain from those solar panels was an impressive 1.2 kilowatt hours total for the whole day. It's not much, but I think it powers my workstation for a couple of hours. So that is a clear sign that summer is fast approaching.
That's nice. That could probably power a jacuzzi for about 22 minutes. so that's impressive. Yay, sunlight. So on a related note, I'm also talking a little bit about the weather. Spring is coming here. I can't really say summer is coming. Spring is coming. Like, the birds are chirping outside, and we've been outside with the family most of the weekend, hanging out in the garden, doing some spring cleaning. That's been really great. I love that it's getting lighter outside as well. Longer days, if you will. So when we wake up, it's already bright outside. And, you know, when we pick up the kids from kindergarten, it's also bright outside. So that, to me, is a sign that spring is coming. And I've also planted all my herbs, my veggies, and my other plants that I usually do. I do that indoors now, and I'm going to move them out as soon as it's warm enough. And I'm looking forward to breaking my last year record of 250 cucumbers, or actually 252, and 220 tomatoes. That's what I did last year in my greenhouse. And this year, I hope I can crack 300 tomatoes and 300 cucumbers, but let's see about that.
Sounds awesome. That's a lot of cucumbers, but I'm certain you can manage those. So today we are back to talk about the Azure Well-Architected Framework, and more specifically, the updated Operational Excellence pillar. The WAF, we've talked about that in a couple of previous episodes, and there was a major update throughout the whole framework. And I really think it's a gift that keeps on giving in a positive way. And for this, because we need experts to tell us what changed and what's relevant here, we brought a guest, Bastian Ulke from Microsoft. Welcome, Bastian. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, Yussi. Hey, Tobias. Thank you so much for having me. I always listen to your show when I'm doing my mountain bike trips. So, for example, because spring is coming, right? We've been there, and I'm riding my mountain bike here in my hometown. I'm really always listening to your show, and it's really a pleasure to be here. So, thank you so much again for having me. Yeah. So, I have joined Microsoft 2.5 years ago now, and since that, I've always been working as a cloud solution architect. And, you know, as cloud solution architect, we work with customers to bring their individual workloads to the Azure cloud. This means that we will discuss the requirements with them and help them finding just the right services and the right configuration for their deployment on Azure. And, you know, every customer is always different, right? So they have all their different goals, their different challenges, different backgrounds and working styles. So it's really an interesting and an exciting role because we really get to see a lot. And last summer, basically, and this is, I think, the reason why we are talking today, I had the privilege to join the group of CSAs who brought in their experience and their perspectives to the refresh of the Well-Architected Framework.
All right. And I really like this. So welcome. We're really glad to have you here. And I'm excited to dive into operational excellence today. And that is one of the pillars of WAF. We've talked about this, I think, 3 years ago or something like this. You see, it was quite some time ago, based on the kind of the old operational excellence pillar that existed. But I think today we're talking about operational excellence in the context of the new updated well-architected framework, or WAF, as we also call it, not to be mixed with the, again, web application firewall that happens way too often. Yeah. So just talking about operational excellence, what is that, you know, before diving into the specifics of WAF, but what is operational excellence, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so let's maybe go one step back and start with a well-architected framework again. So what I typically tell customers is that it's some kind of a methodical framework, right? So if you go to aka.ms/waf and explore that section, which is basically what is the well-architected framework, it will tell you that it's that the WAF is a design framework that can improve the quality of a workload. And from my point of view, the crucial thing here is that it's really a design framework. So I typically tell customers that it will not be about finding just the specific configuration parameter for their specific requirement. It's going to be more about the reflection of what are your business requirements, and then derive just the right decisions from that. So in the reliability thing, for example, that would be a different pillar, of course. We have this notion of introducing redundancy, but it will not tell you always go with a multi-region setup or multi-availability zone setup. It will rather say, figure out your SLA, figure out the composite SLA of the components that you're using, and then derive, if there is a gap, derive the right target configuration for your setup. So it's really about the process of designing things. And WAF has organized this across 5 different pillars, and one of them is exactly operational excellence. And from my point of view, it's really one of the most exciting ones, because it will, of course, have technical guidance. It will have some organizational and procedural guidance, but it will also have a huge area which is related to cultural things. So like really organizing the collaboration within your team and making sure your team is working smoothly together.
I really like this, and perhaps operational excellence back in the day, Toby, maybe it was 2 years ago when we talked about this, I felt that operational excellence was probably the one that I knew the least about. Security is often the one that I focus on quite fiercely, and operational excellence, that's always the ops side, and I rarely get exposed to that during my projects. So operational excellence is one of these 5 pillars then. And Bastian, you said that's probably the most exciting one for you. How would you say, should people start looking at WAF in the sense that they go to aka.ms/WAF, they click pillars, then they click operational excellence, and they just read it through? Or is this something more that you sort of pick and choose which is probably resonating with you the most to get the most value from it? What would be sort of like your high-level guidance in how somebody listening on this could immerse themselves in the operational excellence bits?
Yeah, I think if you go to either of these pillars, I mean, as mentioned, we have got 5 overall, right? So I think you've got different ways to explore the content here. We have got the design principle, which is really like the foundational tenets of all these 5 pillars. They come with a set of approaches. So we typically, for each of these pillars, we've got 5 to 6 design principle with 5 to 6 approaches for each one, which would be one path of exploring the content there. The other thing that you can also do is to basically go back to what we call the design checklist. And these are 10 to 12 items that will really provide you with some more implementation specific guidance and really provide you with best practices that we have learned from our customer engagements, and will provide you with some really specific steps on how you want to implement either of these steps. What I see customers is that they open up this one, and there is really a lot of content, and it's easy to get overwhelmed by this context. So what I typically tell customers is figure out where you might find some low-hanging fruits, for example, for operational excellence. If you're not yet or not starting from scratch anymore in the section of embracing the DevOps culture, for example, you would figure out potentially one or the other idea where you have some low-hanging fruits. Implement this so that you can get some momentum and get onboarded quickly, so that you can figure out how you can make best use of the content which is stored there, then figure out how you can use the content, and then go into that kind of loop where you continuously apply more practices of the well-architected framework. And this specifically, of course, also goes hand in hand with for the operational excellence pillar.
Yeah, I really like this kind of methodical approach, and the way I've used it to reflect on that is with the new kind of checklists that exist across the different pillars, it's a really good way to go in and get the overview and say, maybe I don't need to read everything page by page, but I know kind of what I'm looking for, or I know where I have gaps. And using that kind of checklist, you get to see that, oh, here's a couple of things I didn't know, or here's a couple of things I need to look into, and then you know where to dive in.
Exactly.
So you can kind of navigate it that way. So, like, still on the topic of operational excellence within WAF, you know, for that specific pillars, what would be like the key things? What are the key things we're teaching in that pillar? Why is this important for me to understand?
Yeah, so if you take a look at the overview page for the Design Principles for Operational Excellence, I think it has a pretty nice mission statement, which is that at the core of the Operational Excellence pillar, we've got DevOps practices that ensure workload quality through standardized workflows and through team cohesion. And I think these two aspects nail that pretty well, right? There is that aspect of bringing value to workload by standardization to really reduce the variance in execution to make sure you actually really going to know what's happened when you do the one thing or the other thing. And there is that value of team cohesion, which underlines that you need a diverse skill set to run a workload with all different experiences and different skill sets and all that. And that members have their, that they really, although they bring their individual skills and preferences, they really need to act in consent to make workload operations and the workload development and evolution smooth.
Okay, let me pick on the workload phrase here, because I'm approaching when somebody's telling me that, you see, we need to move this workload from on-premises to the cloud. I'm always thinking in technical terms, like, okay, how many virtual machines? Is there an AKS cluster? Is there a SQL database? So mm-hmm. How would you say in the context of WAF and operational excellence, what is a workload in here?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because as soon as you open up the well-architected framework, you will hear it talking about the workload over and over again. It's really a central term of that entire framework. And there is that one aspect which comprises all the application resources, and I think you nailed just perfect examples for that, right? So virtual machines and databases and your Kubernetes cluster and all that would be like application resources. But the workload expression or the workload term would also comprise the data that it's actually managing, which is especially relevant for the security pillar, for example, and also the supporting infrastructure. And supporting infrastructure here will cover everything that you need to reliably work, to reliably deploy and run your workload, like the monitoring infrastructure, because you need to know what's actually going on, but also all the components that you need to develop to build and deploy your application. The code repositories, maybe you have got some pipelines already, your infrastructure as code assets, all that. So really, like, the entire set of assets that you have to really make to really bring your application to your end users. That's what WAF considers to be part of the workload. And now talking about operational excellence, where we are talking about standardizing workflows to ensure workload quality, I think you can easily get that it's also very much about that supporting infrastructure that we are talking about in context of WAF and OPEX.
Yeah, I really like this. And this kind of paints a nice picture. And like, it seems to me that team and organizational culture is now a very big part of this. Like, it's not just about the specifics of enable the firewall and you know, click this, enable this feature, enable that capability, or design the architecture like this. But it's a lot about the people and process as well, figuring out how you should do something as a team, as an organization. So does like the operational excellence pillar talk about how teams should think about working together? Or is it kind of just about the workloads? Here's how you do the workload thing, and then you move on? Or do you have this kind of organizational thinking and team thinking, and like, how do we as a team improve and get this thing done?
Yeah, I think that's spot on, right? So if you take a look at that first design principles that we have in the operational excellence design principles, that's called embrace DevOps culture, right? And note that it is not about DevOps processes or DevOps tools, it's about DevOps culture. So really, like, the culture within the team and reflecting on how you work with each other and really actively on working your collaboration smooth. So that's the idea here. And there are two basically approaches that we could maybe pick up as examples for that one. So the one is that one idea of having a good DevOps culture that thrives on shared responsibility. And I think we've all been there, right? Traditionally, we've seen this distinction between the development team and the operations team. The development teams would typically be pretty exciting about bringing the new cool stuff into the workload, bringing in integrating cutting-edge technology and all that. And on the other hand, operations teams, which are sort of concerned about new deployments because any deployment might also and always have some unwanted side effects that might negatively impact the service availability. Then you've got this finger pointing here and there, and at the end of the day, this is bringing you nowhere, right? So the idea of the shared responsibility thing is basically, of course, that you need to break down these silos between the different sub-teams within your workload team and really take a shared ownership for running the workload as a team without this notion of us and them. It's just an us, right? And I mean, typically what we see customers experiencing when they are working on that journey is that this also requires sort of a mindset shift, right? Because on the one hand, already during the development stage of your workload, right, you have to think about how can we really effectively bring out this new feature down to the production environment and really make it run at scale. And on the other hand, operations team also need to adopt a little bit because they have to get into this mindset of really enabling for agile development methodologies and allow for frequent deployments and changes.
There's quite a bit to unpack here. And I do like that the framework also is capable of touching these sort of softer aspects as well. It's not just about IT and Terraform and how do you deploy this and should you go with Azure DevOps or GitHub. But it's more about also on the culture and having the psychological safety within the teams that there's less blame in the sense. But now when I'm listening to this one, I'm thinking operational excellence. If I just read on WAF, operational excellence, to me, it is about how do you best run something so that it never fails? So how do I keep this running? Would you say that operational excellence in this context is pretty much focusing on keeping something running, keeping the lights on in the cloud, or is there something more to it as well?
I think there is much more to that. I would say that the operational excellence pillar actually covers the entire lifecycle of your workload development, right? So there is that second design principle that we can maybe briefly take a look at, which is called established development standards. And let's again maybe just pick one idea from that one, which is document workload features and requirements. And this is something you would probably start as early as you can, right? So I will even say that as soon as you've got your first conversation with a stakeholder to plan for a new project, plan newer prototype or something like that, I think it's already a good idea to work on that central go-to point to collect all your information and all the insights that you get from these conversations to allow your team, as it may potentially grow late at a later project stage, to have that central point of knowledge where they can get easily onboarded and get that full overview about what's going on in that project. So documentation, as soon as you have that, then also creating this kind of product backlog so that you've got this shared development tool that your stakeholders, but also your developers, also your infrastructure guys can work on to really negotiate priorities, highlight dependencies and all that. I think that's really crucial. So I would say it starts as soon as you start working on a project and even in the ideation phase, and then you should follow the operational excellence practices as long as you keep the workload running.
I really, really like this. It takes some time to digest. I'm also looking through the actual documentation as you speak, and it's I like this. It's a really good breakdown of you know, the benefits of using the operational excellence kind of approach to whatever you do in the cloud. So it's focusing a lot on the kind of cultural and organizational aspects. Is that kind of the key point of this pillar, or does it go beyond that and say, here's very specific technical guidance as well? Because we talked about people, process, DevOps, culture, stuff like that now. Is that kind of the takeaway for this pillar? Is that what we're learning, or does it go beyond?
I,
these things?
I think this is, I wanted to bring this up at the beginning because I think this is something which makes the operational excellence pillar really unique, right? But it's not restricted to that one. So I highlighted these ones because they are focusing on culture and collaboration. But I mean, at the end of the day, developing and running a workload is a technical task, right? So you will also need to solve some technical challenges. And coming back to that development standards design principle that we already touched on, it will not tell you something about have your product backlog, have your documentation go to point and all that, but it will also tell you, well, you need to agree on a source control system, Git, for example, you need to agree on a branching strategy. You need to discuss within your team if you need different branching strategies for different kinds of requests, like, for example, bug fix maybe handled differently than a feature request, for example. And it underlines the requirements to have active discussions within your team to agree on a common shared tool chain. And tool chain here could employ tools like enforcing your style conventions, coding conventions. How do you want to build your artifacts? Where do you want to store your artifacts? What is your approach of consistently versioning all your assets and all that? So you've got that. For sure, you've got this cultural and this organizational aspect, but then, of course, it will also address really important questions of how you want to organize the coding and the development of your workload and the operations, of course.
So I'm listening on this, and it's sort of dawning on me that there's a lot more to operational excellence. I didn't bypass this pillar, but maybe I skimmed this fairly rapidly when it was updated previously, and I was like, yeah, I get this. Yeah, we're definitely doing all of these that it's listing. But now you mentioned the two principles here. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned there's more, maybe six or seven, I'm not sure, more principles. Perhaps we share a little bit of light on those as well, because I want the audience to also to hear that there's quite a bit of content here to grasp. So if you haven't had a look at the operational excellence, make sure you have a big cup of coffee and hopefully the sun is shining at the same time to really digest through these. But what are the remaining principles that we haven't really mentioned yet?
Yeah, so we've had already embraced DevOps culture and the development standards, right? So these ones that we already briefly touched on, and the four remaining ones, so we've got six overall, the four remaining ones are evolve operations with observability. That's that aspect of having a sophisticated monitoring platform that will allow you to collect insights about how your workload is actually doing. Next one is deploy with confidence. And this provides you with an overview about a set of approaches that ensure the predictability across your deployments, right? Because you want to really have that consistency across multiple executions of deployments and really want to make sure you know what you get when you do a software deployment. Then we've got automate for efficiency, which is all about avoid manual tasks as much as you can, and again, ensure consistency and accuracy. And the final one that we have is employ and use safe deployment practices, which is basically about how do you slice your deployments? How can you orchestrate these deployments to really make sure that your workload always remains in a stable state? Or even potentially have a plan of what you're planning to do if something goes wrong.
Yeah, I really love this. Now I realize we should probably have one episode for each design principle, because there is a lot to unpack in each and every one of these things. I know we're running into the time here, so we can't cover each of these additional four kind of principles, but a lot in this show and that I worked with a lot is like monitoring, observability, keeping tabs of the systems you have running, and how do you get the insights you need and how do you think around that. And one of the principles that you explained here that also exists is like evolve operations with observability. Without like diving into all these four additional principles, if we just pick that one, because I know that's interesting to a lot of people, are there anything we can just have as a takeaway from like the evolve operations with observability principle as well?
Yeah, I think Maybe coming back to what I said at the beginning of the show, when I said that the well-architected framework is a methodical framework that will guide you through the design process. I think this is a really good example for this for this statement or for this approach of the WAF, because the first thing that you would need to do following this approach here would be to mindfully define which data is actually valuable for you. And WAF says, well, data can be valuable if it allows you to derive some insights that allow you to take some immediate action or to derive specific decisions. An immediate action could be something like we need to scale out the number of worker nodes for performance reasons, for example, or deriving a decision could involve, well, we've seen processing times increasing in this area, for example, so we would need to refactor our code here to improve the processing times. And then it's about designing which data you want to collect, how long you want to keep it, and where you want to store it. Because at the end of the day, you will probably find different purposes for collecting this data. For auditing reasons, maybe you have some, you need a much higher retention time because you need to keep certain data for really a lot of time, but you will probably not need to very frequently interactively query this data. So you might think about keeping this data on some kind of cheaper archive storage. But then again, if you go into troubleshooting, you want to be able to maybe collect logs across different components, even be able to query that data across these different components and correlate this information, explore data interactively and all that. So here you won't need a longer retention time, rather probably just a couple of days or maybe some weeks, but we need much more advanced capabilities to actually analyze that data. And the approach of evolve operations with observability will guide you through this process, right? So figure out which purposes you are following and then derive just the right architecture for your observability platform.
I'm also looking at the operational excellence on the website, and I can see the recommendations. I think there's 12 recommendations on the patterns that you should be doing. And again, I'm reminded that there's quite a bit of depth here beyond just doing X and then you're done with this whole, killer. So when you work with the content, when you work with customers, maybe on this and in projects, is there ever a time when you can say to, let's say, to a company who's adopting WAF or whatever they're building in the cloud, is there ever a time that you can say, we are done with this, we can move away from this pillar, we never have to come back here?
Well, to be honest, I would say you are never really done, right? So one thing that I think you should never do is to stop reviewing your own progress and your own maturity. I think this is not really specific to OPEX, but I think you can apply this to any section within the well-architected framework. Because I think from my point of view, there are two reasons for that. On the one hand, you've got this aspect of continuous improvement, right? So I think it's always worth reflecting on how the last incident handling went, for example, or also being self-reflective and open-minded for how you work together as a team. So that's that one thing where you can, I think, always improve. But I would also say you've got this thing that I call workload evolution. So the perfect decisions that you took today may not be the perfect fit for tomorrow, right? So because there is change all over the workload, right? Your business requirements may change. Maybe the group of stakeholders may change. The data volume that you need to process may change. Maybe even some APIs or systems that you integrate with, they can always change. So there is this change which is coming maybe from the team itself, because you want to do some changes on how you want to work together or how you want to run things. But there are also these changes that you need to react to because they are coming from something beyond the scope of your own team. And as long as you need to you are imposed to this kind of evolution, I think you also need to change the workload and you have to master that change in a certain way, right? So, and this is why I think you're never really done. So
I think that is very well said. Like with everything, you're never done. I think it's a very mature way of thinking about it when you think that, like, it's always a continuous journey. It's same with all the projects. If you build a product, whatever it is, it's very difficult to envision like a start and an end. It's always continuous improvement. So I love that you mentioned that specifically, because that relates a lot. So final thing top of my mind is trade-offs. I know there are trade-offs between different pillars. Is there like one thing you would pick as the most important trade-off in the operational excellence framework versus other pillars? Or is that something that also kind of evolves over time? Will there be different trade-offs? Or is it more like, just understand, here's a couple of things you should be aware of. Because like we know, we talked about this in the show before, if you really want to cost optimize, that's one of the pillars. If you really want to enforce cost optimization, you can't have all the security features because that's going to, you know, drive your cost up.
Yep.
Same with reliability. If you want additional zones, availability zones, if you want multi-region deployment in four different regions, that's going to drive the cost up. So there's always going to be some kind of trade-off between things. And I think we know that cost versus reliability is a, you know, there's a bunch of trade-offs there because you can't have it all and not pay for it. But I'm not clear on the ones for operational excellence. Do you have any trade-offs here?
Yeah, so I mean, cost optimization is always an evergreen, right? For any kind of optimization for one of the other pillars. And same goes here, right? So talking about operational excellence, you will probably want to have your environments that you can use to have your quality assurance processes, like really do thorough testing in the pre-prod stages. But of course, this would come in with a price tag, right? Then you could also reflect on what is the parity that you have in your pre-prod environments. Is that really exactly the same configuration as you've got in your prod environments? Probably you will not want to do this from a cost perspective. So I think the trade-off between operational excellence and cost, this is something we have here as we have it in the reliability pillar as well. But also talking about operational excellence versus reliability, I think there are some things to note. In reliability, for example, there is this this design principle of keeping the architecture intentionally simple. Whereas when we are talking about operational excellence with setting up multiple pipelines, really integrating that, making all that integration run smoothly, it comes with a certain level of complexity, right? Also, the entire set of tools that you would need to integrate into your pipelines in the build stages. So all this set of tools, that environment of tools opens up a new complexity, also potentially opens another surface area, which might be some conflict with security, right? So operational excellence, if you really do it, this is really bringing a lot of supporting infrastructure into your workload. This has to be mastered. You've got the security concerns, you've got reliability concerns and all that. So I think this is really something that you where you have to mindfully find the trade-off, which is just the right fit for your context.
I'm sold on this pillar. I liked security the most, but now this one is competing almost equally with security for me because I'm understanding it more. So last question from me. How do people get started with this one? Should they just go to aka.ms/WAF, select pillar operational excellence and start reading? What's beyond just reading this? What would be your advice?
Yeah, I think we briefly touched on that at the beginning of the session, right? My advice would really be to explore the content a little bit further. There are always these different paths, like going down the checklist. I think, Tobias, you mentioned that this is really a good starting point, right? And exploring the guides that we have attached to the checklist there. And then I would probably look out for some low-hanging fruits. So some things where you can really benefit from the content and from the insights that you have there and bring it into your workload, into your team to experiment with that. And with that, also experimenting how you can make best use of the content which is in the well-architected framework, right? I would probably not recommend customers to say, or users or readers to say, okay, now I'm reading through all this content, I'm making a very, very sophisticated project plan, and then I'm starting my WAF project. I think this might be a little bit overwhelming, and you might get stuck in this paralysis and this analysis paralysis. So I would rather recommend get your hands dirty, figure out where you can create some momentum for yourself and the team, and then simply start going and take it from there.
Yep, sounds good. Alrighty, the last bit we have is the unexpected question. Toby, I think you have a question for Bastian.
I do have a question. And again, it's something that, you know, I'm contemplating on the difficult things in life. And here's something I can't figure out. What's Azure's favorite hobby?
Azure's favorite hobby? I mean, I think Azure is already a pretty busy lady today, right? So she's juggling balls in, I think, 60 to 70 places at the same time, like West Europe, Sweden, Central, US East, US West, like everywhere. Do you really think she has time for a hobby? Probably, I would say it might be really having a hard race with AWS for the coolest and most innovative features. Would that make sense?
All right. Yeah. That might be a good way to put that. Yeah,
for sure. Alrighty, thank you, Bastian, for joining us, and thanks everybody for tuning in. See you next week.
Thank you again for welcoming me.
All right, see you next time.